Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, episode 349. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
And Graham Thickens is going back to his underwear modeling career and pajama modeling career. No, lingerie modeling career. So we won't be seeing Graham on the podcast very much, if at all, in the going forward. So we want to thank him for his incredible service. I mean, 349 shows. We were just talking about this before we got on the podcast. And our first show was in June of 2008. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about how many times we've talked and interviewed and been on remotes and all of that. Pretty incredible.
Yeah. And he's becoming more and more involved in mini analytics and
very
other
much
things.
So. Yep.
We haven't heard the last of Graham Thickens, I'll tell you that.
On as a guest.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
Talk
right.
Analytics at some point.
Yep.
So we're now opening auditions for our...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, Howard Stern, I heard Howard open, Stern is busy, so we're not going to get...
It's an open call.
Oh, man.
So, anywho...
So, Minnesota Stories, this e-commerce firm is 451. It's kind of on a roll.
$5 million.
That's right. They doubled their staff last year, and customers are Taylor Corp and Bachmann's and...
It's a niche. It's a B2B e-commerce play, and it looks interesting. I haven't really been familiar with them, 451, but you know, it looks like they fill a need for B2B companies in the e-commerce space, and they're poised for more growth.
Well, and they started as a e-procurement provider for the printing market, and that tells me that they're very process-centric, which is a big deal in the B2B space. Because typically it's not a matter of, oh, here's a product, add it to your cart, and then check out. I mean, that's not how it works. It's purchase orders, and it's, you know, pro forma financial statements and or invoicing and all of that stuff. So they probably nailed that. So that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's up. But congratulations to them.
Well, good for them.
Best of luck.
Absolutely.
And then Julio's story of the week about this startup down in Stillwater.
Yeah, over what's Stillwater. Up with that company?
It's a meter that hooks to your iPhone for diabetics.
Yeah, I saw that. That's really interesting.
Blood. It's like a clip-on thing, it looks like. And it connects to your iPhone, and it has a little game-like interface. It has an app that it runs on, and it measures your blood whenever diabetes people need to do that.
Well, it was my understanding that there was a clip-on device as well by another company for the bottom of your phone, and then you would
plug it to the
you'd prick your finger and put it on the strip, and then it would test it that way. So something similar.
Well, this has there's a lot of products like this that are standalone that give you numbers and, you know, that tells you what your blood sugar is at. This one, because it pairs with your smartphone, allows you to share the data in real time with the doctors or with your family or whatever.
Okay.
Which, you know, when if you're caring for an elderly person or you have a kid that has diabetes and you need to, you know, keep up with it, I think that's a good value. So it's good to see some more local innovation here in Minnesota.
Well, would you consider this an IoT entry?
Is it? No.
I mean, because it connects with your iPhone via, well, I don't know. It connects to your phone via Bluetooth. So it is a device in some extent. I mean, it basically carries lancets and, you know, the testing pieces. So, I mean, you still have to draw blood. It's not like it's picking it up through your skin or something. But
right.
You wouldn't consider this an IoT play?
No.
Not really.
No, because IoT is really all about controlling things remotely and having device sensors. I mean, if this was something that you wore, you know, if it was a wearable, if it was a device that could test your blood glucose levels without any intervention, in other words, you don't have to prick yourself and draw blood, then that would be more in the IoT space. But I don't know. You know what? Just about everything that's connected to the internet somehow falls into IoT. So I guess you could argue that, yeah, in some ways it is that way.
And a side point on this, since we're on the Pioneer Press website, which has just switched over to WordPress, I find this very difficult to find stuff.
Do you?
Oh.
I mean, the design is certainly better than what they had, and it's not. It doesn't appear as heavy in ads, but this seems like the menuing system. It took me a while to figure out where the heck Julio writes his stuff, and it's under news, and you have to go to scroll down until you find business, and then you find technology under that. In the old website, there was one drop down that said, you know, business technology, boom, you're there. Huh. So it's good to see them, move up into something that's more sustainable, but it's, I don't know. I think there's some more work to do here.
Yeah, it is kind of hard to find him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow, that's a really low resolution picture in that crime and police story, by the way.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, so I'm going to recommend, based on this next article in the the Strib, that many see coding boot camps as a fast track to jobs that Graham should get out of his lingerie modeling career and back into coding.
Well, I've been thinking about pivoting my business more in this direction. So I wanted to get Phil's kind of professional opinion. If he's looking for people that may be, you know, that may have had careers in other areas that are pivoting in, if he's evaluating people that go to this kind of boot campy kind of a way to get educated, or is he looking for more practical experience over years and years and years, more traditional?
Traditional in this business is they ain't no such thing, Tim. I mean, I don't really believe that there is a traditional path to you know, being a great developer. I mean, our vice president of mobile is at BuzzFeed, you know, used to be a lawyer, and now he's, you know, now he, you know, became a iPhone coder, and now he's, you know,
really
doing great things. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there is a traditional path. So yeah, we look at every outlet of coders. Now, right now, BuzzFeed Minneapolis, and I know we've been saying this for a year, we're still really at that point. We're looking for more senior level, more experience, more tested I guess experienced coders. But the goal of any shop like ours is to be able to move from that point on to, looking at people that we can mentor and grow, from a business standpoint. You usually pay less money for those folks, and you can, they can build a strong skill set inside the company, learning from all of these other senior people. So I think that's always the goal, I've interviewed a couple of people that have been come out of boot camps or come out of, like Prime Academy, some pretty cool people and doing some really good things. But so far haven't really found that person that's like, oh yeah, well, this is a perfect fit for us. But yeah, I think you look everywhere these days because, the good coders, the experienced coders, the senior level, insanely expensive. And, we got to get past that point.
Yeah, well, I find that there's a lot of age discrimination as well. That's a problem for someone of my age. And I intend to work at least another 20 years. And, people just, working for somebody else outside of a contract basis, which I have been doing for the past decade, is it just seems like, I might as well just, continue on the solo gig for the next 20 years, basically, which is somewhat disappointing, but I think it's the way that the market is. And until things get better, and I don't see that happening for a number of years now, I think that people in our age bracket will really have trouble, pivoting and changing careers in a significant way. So... it's still not going to, I'm still going to do the app thing. It's just going to come from a different way, and it's going to be more of a solo, app store driven kind of a deal. But there's a lot of talent on the street that is just not being deployed because of age. And it's really disappointing because early in my career, I was the youngest to do this and the youngest to do that. And it was always, I couldn't do something. I couldn't progress in my career because I was too young.
Right.
And now on the other end of it, I find out that I'm too old. And, you know, it's just.
I see. I don't think you're too old. I really don't think you're too old because I think that there are opportunities here. As far as, I mean, if you look at, I'm looking at strictly from the developer's standpoint side, Tim, you know, and I know that that's not necessarily what you're talking about, but the developer standpoint is that it's all about the code. And if your code is good and if your code is strong and if you've built apps or you've built, you know, a platform or an algorithm or whatever it is, if that's strong, people are going to look past that age piece. I mean, it really is. Now, getting to that point and getting on the radar, yeah, it's because you always harken back to it's a young person's game. I don't think that's true anymore. But I also feel like for me, it's very important to look at not look at age, but look at quality, experience, desire to learn.
So. Well, I would actually like to throw one other thing in, which is it is really, really difficult to try to do everything, you know, to be an expert in SEO and to be an expert in, you know, content marketing and to be an expert in building the site and to be an expert in, you know, all of these different fields. And yet, with all of the web applications that are out there and the various platforms you can take advantage of and all of that, it still is really hard to build a virtual team. I mean, like the movie business out in California, I mean, I know a small firm out there that does 3D animation with Lightwave from NewTek, and they do it for television shows. And they also do some work on movies. And so somebody will get a project to do a show or to do a movie, and they'll bring together all of these disparate little firms, come together in a project, build out their piece of it, and then disperse. And the movie business has really learned how to manage all of these free agent kind of groups or even individuals. And we really haven't in technology, surprisingly. I mean, you could argue GitHub and all of these other tools have certainly moved in that direction, and there's online project management and so forth. But it's still, doesn't it seem hard to bring together, you know, 3, 4, 5 people on a project and to try to manage everybody virtually and free up time and so forth?
It is. It's a huge problem, and you can, you know, get subcontractors, and I do this occasionally, from offshore to help either, you know, work a project when you're sleeping or to get some work done quickly in tandem with something that you're doing. And it is, there's some good services that help you do that. But to do that as a, you know, ongoing concern and trying to orchestrate and pull that team together to, you know, to get a project done is hard work. And so what I've decided to do is I'm going to go to work for Microsoft, and I'm going to drop a bunch of data centers in the middle of the ocean.
Wasn't that a great article? Microsoft plumbs the ocean depths to test underwater data center.
Okay, now this is an interesting concept because there's nothing harder to do than to keep data centers cool.
Yeah.
Solve that problem by doing heat exchange with the ocean.
Interesting.
Just to drop them down.
But you could do. Can you imagine the knock on the door? So I had this idea, guys. Let's say we try to drop our data center in the middle of the ocean. What do you think?
It's cool. It's cool down there.
It's cool down there.
Well, I don't know.
Bob's been drinking again.
What's funny? There are self-contained little pods that you just literally drop down into the ocean, and it uses the resources around them to cool it. And you really don't have to. I mean, as long as you got some remote access software, you don't really physically get access to the machines, servers very often. And with failover, if a blade goes dead, you just go, oh, okay, the software roots around it anyway. So I imagine you could probably put these out for years at a time before you had to pull them up and get inside and replace, you know, some of the servers.
But still.
Drives, you know,
the ocean and a data center. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Yeah, but think of the new job possibilities, guys.
Hey, underwater I'm a scuba diver.
Underwater IT.
That's
there
right.
You
I'm
go.
I'm a certified scuba diver, and I could too. Definitely go down there. And
I've got it. This is my career right here.
It is.
There you go, Tim. You've solved your own problem.
Oh, boom. Boom.
You know, it's so funny because I'm both NAWI and PADI certified, and then I went and got an assistant instructor certificate, and I know that if I went out and dove now, I would die.
Why?
Well, because I've snorkeled like crazy, but I haven't gone scuba diving, I bet you, for 10 years. So I'd have to take a refresher.
I was thinking the same thing because, I was certified years ago when we were first married, and it's like I haven't been diving in years. I sure would like to again, man. That was just the greatest feeling ever.
So. Well, and of course Phil Wilson not having dove for a long time in the ocean, what could go wrong?
Exactly.
What could go wrong?
So what's this next one about? Microsoft launches IoT hub.
It's my show link of the week. Anything to do with IoT.
Yeah, it's got an IoT in the title, so this is Steve Borsch.
So I said, oh, okay, Steve knows all about the Azure.
Well, I do know about the Azure IoT platform direction and all of that. In fact, I got to ping Doug Olson and find out more about this. Doug Olson, for those of you listening, is a Microsoft head of development for Azure, some form of Azure. I don't even know what his title is now. He's like a general manager type. But I need to find out more about this because it's, you know, they came to our conference last year, IoT Fuse, and Microsoft did. And they were showing a lot about Azure and what was going on. And but not this, which is really to catch the data, to scoop it up and to process it. And that's been one of the biggest issues in the IoT space is, okay, we've got all these damn sensors out there. Hey, won't it be great when we can analyze all the big data that'll be generated from them? Okay, yeah, but how are you going to get all the data from the devices and the sensors to the cloud and then make sense of it? That's exactly what this is all about. So
well,
it's pretty,
keep an eye on this.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. So Amazon, our pals at Amazon. So even Stephen Colbert on his show, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, made fun of Amazon going out and building
a store. Yeah.
And, then he went on this riff about, and what a concept, you know, going from online to actually stores where you can walk into them and buy things. You know?
So my question is, what do you suppose this is? Is this hubris? Is this just stupidity? Is the, you know, because you often look at companies that have done something, have done it really well, and then start thinking, what else can we do? And all of a sudden they look like a business that they really had changed the face of, and they kind of gone back and put that old face on. What is the point of Amazon Books? I mean, Borders was gone, and all of these bookstores are almost gone. Why is there a bookstore now for Amazon?
Because it's a customer point of presence for customer support, live customer support. And if you look at the next story, which is about a tablet market share, which I thought was interesting and somehow linked to this, is the Fire tablets, which I find to be quite compelling devices because of price and functionality. Yeah. And just the kind of the way that it's content centric. I find it to be a less imposing interface than the iPhone or the iPad or any other Android tablets. They took a precipitous, almost 200% decline. It's going up. It's going the other way. They increase year over year. Anyway, they're seeing a lot of action there, and I think that if they're going to really get more market share and get more people to trust the brand and to buy more of their devices, they're going to need to have places where people can go, not only see them, but also get their questions answered by real people. And they're just taking the page out of the Apple playbook, and they're saying, okay, we're going to have mall-based Amazon stores that sell books, but also there are other devices like the Echo. So you got another chance to get another Echo, Phil, and Fire tablets and Kindle e-readers.
It's just I keep looking at the Echo and I keep thinking, God, Jesus, why did I send that back? It just keeps. No, now it's got Spotify. Now it's got, my God, what else I saw?
I'm tempted to buy one. I'm just waiting for the next Prime deal where I get it for $100.
Yeah, I don't know if that ship may have sailed, Tim. I don't know.
Well, see, I wonder, though, if the Amazon retail store thing would be, them displaying and showing only the stuff that they sell. The stuff that they brand and sell.
Yeah, for devices, absolutely. It'll only be that. But they have books, and it's a way to fill up and bring people in, almost like a Trojan horse. The Borders or the, Barnes & Noble, they've all gone out of business. But I always like to go there and browse the Make magazine, or whatever, or get a coffee or, read a book. People miss that. They want that community. They want the satisfaction of going and finding a book serendipitously. And look at this Kindle thing. Oh, that's interesting. Well, So I think it's a good idea, and that this will prove to be a successful program. I'm not sure if the 300 or 400 stores over the next year is a good idea, which someone in the story talked about. They have one of these stores in Seattle right now.
Interesting. Is that what the picture is?
What the picture at the top is. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
So it kind of looks like a Barnes & Noble-y kind of a place.
Yeah. Huh.
Anyway.
It does look very Barnes & Noble-y.
I think it's a good plan. They should, go slow. Hopefully we'll see one of these at the Mall of America so we can get our hands on it and talk about it live someday. But we'll see. But as I look at the numbers now on the next story about tablets, it's the iPad and the Galaxy tablets that Samsung sells are losing market share, while the Fire tablets from Amazon are gaining market share, still with the iPad in the lead. But everybody else across the board pretty much is declining, except for Huawei, which sells very low-cost Android tablets. So is the tablet business is it over? Or is it so mature that people aren't replacing them as quickly as you might expect, like they do with smartphones?
That's a really good question, because I love my little iPad mini, but I am starting to experience just slight lags when I do certain things. So as the apps continue to be updated, the processor isn't as fast, and I don't know. It's still a great little device, and I love it. But I'm really going to look seriously at the iPad 3 when it comes out and potentially upgrade to that. But yet I've had this iPad longer than I've had anything else. I've had this thing for now over 2 years.
I think normal people, not tech savvy, but regular people, they will use something like an iPad and put up with whatever problems that they might notice or not notice as far as lag or whatever for a lot longer. And they'll use it until it breaks, literally,
Yeah. Well, I gave my iPad 1 to my older sister, and she, honest to God, she just used that thing forever, and she couldn't upgrade the OS anymore and so on. And I said, well, how do you still like your iPad? Do you still use it? She goes, I use it every night. As soon as I go to bed, I lay there and I go through and I read email and I go through, she goes through different publications and all that. It's like, okay.
It works fine.
It works fine. Yeah.
Anyway.
Incredible. So who put this next link in here? A first-hand quest for the future of sex, part 2.
I put that in there because it has the everything that Steve Borsch would ever want.
Oh, thanks a lot.
It talks about teledildonics. it talks about holodecks. It's got everything in it. Well, I was reading this because this was the second part of an Engadget story where the author is basically looking for, you know, trying to, you know, experience what this whole virtual sex, thing is all about. And it's a very humorous two-part story, but really I put it in there simply because it talked about teledildonics and a holodeck, simply because, you know, whenever we talk about anything related to sex on the internet, Steve drops those two phrases.
Okay, so. Well, here's the thing, though. I think this is the guy in part one. I'll have to look at part one. I think this is the guy that wrote about using VR and putting the goggles on and saying it is frighteningly good. It is
so
realistic. Okay, well, I read, maybe it was in Wired, but this guy had gone into these different hotel suites where they had these systems set up and so on, and he put it on and he said, honest to God, he said, I was there and I knew there were people standing around seeing what my reaction would be. And he said, I really was sort of embarrassed because I got aroused.
Well, this guy tries the full Monty, that, you know, not only the virtual reality, but also the accessories that come with it, for lack of a better term, the penis pumps and all the other things that go with it. So,
incredible. Well, but the teledildonics piece is that, you know, the potential is that someone from afar will be able to, you know, you have your VR goggles on and someone from afar will be able to manipulate the devices that you have, you know, whether you're female or male.
And that's what he talks about in this particular piece. Man. So it's really an interesting, he said it's, you know, and pardon my language, the whole concept of, he said, I ultimately found myself literally fucking myself.
Oh, geez. Well, I will tell you, you know, here's what's interesting. You know, the porn industry really pushes the envelope on technology, as everybody has always talked about, especially on the web and all of that. Well, so here's what's interesting. And then we think the only way that they got in was through our guest network, because I had a laughingly simple password on our guest network. And there's... it's a long story, but I got a DMCA takedown notice from Comcast because somebody downloaded, and I'm convinced it wasn't my 21-year-old upstairs. But we got a DMCA takedown notice, and it was really interesting because of the way that they apparently found it, that they were able to come in through the IP address and everything else. And, you know, no, it wasn't me.
What's a DMC takedown notice there?
Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And so what they do is that if you're using BitTorrent and you download film, they can, even through Tor, they can still track back to the IP address.
Gotcha.
So they're just for everyone listening, there's no safe way to download through BitTorrent unless you're super smart and you know exactly how to hide it. Which I do, so there's no way that would ever happen to me. But anyway, so I changed the super simple password on our guest network to something much more complex. But at any rate, I ended up calling Comcast support to basically find out what I could in terms of kind of state of the art is and all that. And of course they immediately said, well, check all your machines to make sure you don't have any malware. And I said, well, we run Macs and it's unlikely that that's the cause. They don't have any solution. They don't have any kind of a firewall. And even in their modem, they've got a firewall, but it's all it does is stop port scanning. And so there's all this technology that's out there that is not making it simple for those of us who, you know, have home networks to stay safe. Unless you're stupid like me, Mr. Security Boy, who puts a simple password on his guest network.
I don't even have a guest network for that reason.
Well, and word to the wise, if you have an Xfinity modem, when they come out and set that up for you, the password, the administrative password, is actually now printed on the bottom of the modem because people forget it and they can't get into it. And now they can go and look at it and get right into it. Well, they also automatically set up the Xfinity public Wi-Fi. And it has the same IP address as your IP address. So anybody can use that Xfinity Wi-Fi. Now, apparently they do have a way of differentiating whether or not somebody came in through that Xfinity Wi-Fi. But just a word to the wise, there is a way, easy way to turn that off through the administrator interface. So anyway.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. There you have
so
it.
So new technologies give government ample means to track suspects.
He's from New York Times, gets into all the issues about backdoors and what Apple's doing for being for you know, protection and privacy of their users and what the government wants, which are easy ways that they can surveil. And they say that it's for terrorists and other people that are breaking the law. But of course, we all know that they surveil everybody. And I think it's, you know, the whole mass surveillance program could be great for blackmailing people or for making money on the stock market illegally through insider trading. And who's going to know, right? So right, it's good, right. It's a good article that gets into everything. And I put it last here because I know that you want to talk about, you know, this kind of issue in the next segment. So I thought it would be a good segue kind of a story.
Well, and one of the things that we can mention, actually, I didn't have a, it was a good segue story, but the one thing that I didn't put in, well, maybe we should just talk about this.
Okay.
We have a section of the show that we used to do regularly that we resurrect everyone once in a while called Gang Mentality, and it's our opportunity to talk about one particular topic. And it's really about the Internet of Things. And there's been tons of articles about security or the lack thereof in many Internet of Things devices, whether it's cameras, you know, that baby monitor cameras that are coming in that are being hacked. And yes, a lot of times it's people don't put up the right passwords and all of that, but there's all kinds of security holes in all these different devices or companies that accidentally, or maybe on purpose, leave the test code in the device itself and they forget to take it out. So now hackers just try it and hey, it works. But there was a really great article about encryption may hurt surveillance, but the Internet of Things could open doors. So even though at the same time all this encryption stuff's happening, you know, with Apple and Google and even Facebook, and many, many of the devices that we walk around with our smartphones and tablets and so on, the Internet of Things, there's so many holes in there that it's going to be a huge problem. And so when you guys, for example, go out and look for something to add to your home that you're going to connect up to the internet. Do you do any research in advance to find out if there's any security issues?
No, I just don't do any of that stuff.
Nothing.
No, I'm using my X10 system where it works. All I want to do is turn lights on and off. I mean, how hard could it be?
Yeah.
I don't need a smartphone app to do that.
How about you, Phil?
I do. I need a smartphone app. No, I don't do a lot of it. So simply because I haven't decided I needed that yet. So
yeah. Okay. Well, because I do.
You do a lot of it. I know.
Yeah, and so I walked into the Best Buy Eden Prairie store yesterday.
Okay.
And they have moved. It used to be on a back wall. They have moved their connected home area, front and center. So mm-hmm. Right when you walk in, just slightly to the right, you walk straight ahead and there's a whole connected home area. And they have Lutron and they've got all these different companies there. Ironically, they did not have SmartThings either in the Samsung area or up there because SmartThings is coming out with an entirely new line of a product in terms of sensors and light switches and all that kind of stuff to go along with their new 2.0 hub. And I actually went in because I wanted to buy the new 2.0 hub because it's a long story. But anyway, I was really impressed by the number of cameras they had. And also the number of devices they had from all these different manufacturers. I mean, the ones we know, Philips and, you know, Nest and Lutron and all that, but lots of off brands as well. And it's the off brands that I actually worry about. I mean, the off brands had some pretty interesting product, especially this one kit where you could buy 8 cameras for your home. And it all connected up to your hub, and then you could only see all 8 cameras on your computer. You can't on your tablet or smartphone, but you have to switch between them. But on your computer, you can see all the cameras. And I thought that was really, really interesting. But it's like, you know, Schmedlap Incorporated. I mean, it's just like, who are these guys? So I have no idea whether or not these things have, you know, tons of security holes in them or whatever. And so I have a list here of this, some of the stuff I was interested in. I'm going to look at it after the show, and I'm going to start poking around the net and see if anyone's reported any incidents of hacking. So, and then there's one other thing that just happened, mm-hmm. which is the NSA has decided that they are going to merge essentially their offense and defense. So they're reorganizing the NSA so that the defensive arm of the NSA, that's the one that figures out how to secure government networks and keep them protected, is going to be absorbed by the intelligence gathering side, which collects signals intelligence. And this IAD, the Information Assurance Directorate, that, you know, is the defensive arm, is essentially going to cease to exist. So on the one hand, IAD used to keep the chicken coop protected, and now signal intelligence is trying to figure out how to get the fox in the hen house. So what's wrong with this picture?
What could go wrong?
So it really makes me wonder, though, what's going to happen with the Internet of Things? I mean, they're probably salivating over all of these devices and ways to get into people's homes and businesses. Yep. So
just imagine this turning a microphone on and this listening, you know, recording everything.
Right. And their
treasure trove of stuff.
Right.
We've overcome that in our house because now we just yell at each other. So everybody can hear anyway. So it's not a big problem.
We're converting to sign language. So
we're going to do it. Well, you know what's funny is, you know, there's sort of this meme about using typewriters to get around security and encryption, you know.
There you go.
And so I'm going to use a typewriter and I'm going to do that. Well, here's what's interesting. In fact, I'll try to find this article. There's an article that said all they need to do is hear the keys as you're typing. So if they can pick up the audio from the keys you're typing, that they can then convert that into words. Yeah.
What?
Yep, absolutely. Well, because, you know, it's real easy to decode because, you know, E is the most commonly used letter in the English language, but that there's also common bridge words, and, it, the, and so it's real easy to figure out what the bridge words are. And once you figure out the bridge words, then you can figure out what the words are on either side of the bridge words, and you just run a program against it, and you can figure out what people are typing. It's like reading lips. You're not going to get everything, but you're going to get 90% of it.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty fun, huh?
All right.
Reminds me of the scene in 2001 where Hal is reading their lips and
yes.
Yep.
And decides to kill them both.
It all goes terribly wrong.
That's right. All right.
Pod bay door, Hal.
I'm well, sorry, Dave.
Can't do that.
So let's touch on our cool things of the week.
It's the cool thing of the week.
Yeah. Tim, you get to go first.
All right. So this is one that I found a couple weeks ago. And I know that last week I said I would have something that you can buy, and you kind of can buy this. It's on Kickstarter.
What?
It's Belgium. It's from Europe. It's called the Olmos, which who knows what that means in whatever language. Maybe they speak Flemish there in Belgium, or it's probably French. Anyway, it's a good idea. It's a cradle that right. you put your old smartphone. So the smartphone that you you know, got rid of or right. you upgraded from. So in Steve's case, his old iPhone 5S, let's say, and you put it into this cradle, and it turns it along with an app that they sell you into a security camera slash system. And you can, of course, control it with your new smartphone remotely if you so desire. So it's a good idea to reuse stuff, and to it has very low cost elements to it. And you know, you can get in for what, $25, I think. It's all in euros, so you know
it has. That's very clever.
Yeah, it's a clever idea. I'm not sure if this is going to take off, quite frankly, but I like the idea of using old technology that's in your drawer to do something right. useful, you know, like make sure that your house is secure while you're gone.
Could you use something like an iPod Touch?
I don't know. It shows in this thing that, and if you look at the video, it's all smartphones.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, it's probably connected by Wi-Fi, obviously, yeah. rather than a mobile network. So, but if it was a mobile network, then you could plug this thing in anywhere. That mm-hmm. you had a mobile signal.
Right.
Huh. Very clever.
Very cool.
It is a cool thing, and it's my cool thing of this week.
Excellent.
Very nice. Very nice.
Mr. Phil.
I came across this. This is a another drone, but this drone not only flies, it swims.
Wow.
So it's underwater and above water. So it's called the Loon Copter. Perfect for Minnesota, right?
Very cool.
Seems like, I believe this is a Dubai startup. So,
well, now I wonder if the power went out, would the thing sink? But no, it does say it's buoyant. Yep, it requires no energy to float. So yeah, if it goes into the water, at least you have a chance of getting it out.
Yeah. So the propellers actually pull it down under the water. So
those guys. Soft with their data center, they're going to need one of these to check.
They're going
to
need one of these.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
I see a synergistic relationship.
Yeah, but
so
see,
check that out. It's the Loon camera.
So the funny part of that is that I could just see myself flying this over the Minnesota River and having the thing run out of juice, land in the water, and me thinking, oh, yes, but it's buoyant. Wait a minute. How am I going to get it?
You're right. Exactly.
Am I going to swim out to the middle of the river? I don't have a boat out here.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. All
you
right.
Have to go downstream and just wait for it.
So a little preface to my cool thing. So we have a friend who's an artist and a sculptor, and he does all kinds of really wonderful things. And this has actually been out for a while, and it was done in the UK, and now it's available at Lowe's and Target stores, 2,000 Target stores in the U.S. It's called Suguru, and it's moldable glue, and it's made out of silicon. And other materials, but basically you take it out of the package and you mold it and shape it into anything you want, and then it takes about 24 hours. It's heat and moisture related, so the thinner you put it on, the faster it'll cure, but it takes roughly 24 hours, and it's hard, you know, it's silicone, so you could do all kinds of stuff. They show you know, people putting it on knives to make it handle better, to stick a compass on your bike, because it's glue, but it's silicone, so it's heat resistant and also, you know, soft to the touch and so forth. They show this other cool one where this woman actually made little outlines of Braille that she put on the microwave, because she said her husband couldn't use the microwave. He's blind. He couldn't use the microwave. Just these incredibly clever things. In fact, you can see tons of ideas on their website. And right. And so he opened one of these packages, and we were kind of goofing with it. And kind of it feels a little bit like Play-Doh, like a slippery Play-Doh. And once it's molded and shaped, then you can have it cure, and now you have a permanent fix. but you really need to look at some of these examples. Anyway, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, one of the guys at the office or at our office back when we were at Cocoa actually ordered some of this stuff. For the exact same reason as it shows on this, the fixing of the USB plug on his phone. So
really,
it's exact. Yeah, and works great.
$12 at your local Target store.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's available at the Lakeville Super Target, Phil.
Okay, there well, I'm go. On. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Excellent.
There you go.
Right. Well, in terms of events, we've talked about most of this stuff every time. I just want to reiterate that if you're listening and you go down to upcoming events, that we do have a complete list of 250-plus tech IT and development conferences in 2016. So that's a good one to go through. Was there nothing else was new on here, though?
No, actually, I just wanted to point out that we did had to reschedule our Overcoming the Gender Bias in Mobile with Nancy Lyons. That was part of our Mobile Twin Cities, which was on Tuesday because of the snow.
Oh, that's right.
Whether the snow was bad or just the threat of snow, we felt it was best to go ahead. And we thought it was – I think it's a very hot topic and a very – there was a lot of interest in it. We had some 70-plus people signed up for it. So we decided to move it, and we've rescheduled it for the 16th of February. So Nancy Lyons will present it there at the BuzzFeed offices. So look for that at mobiletwincities.com. So,
all right.
There you have it. But and I'm off to DevFest today. A couple of presentations.
We'll have to talk about that next week.
Sounds great. And we'll do it on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Then.
Take care.